You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to the White Towel Podcast. It's Ben Kuzma, Canucks beat writer, along with my colleague, columnist Ed Willis. Paul Chabon is AWOL, but that's okay. We'll press on. So much to talk about, Ed. I don't know really where we want to start with, but why don't we talk about the latest development with the hockey club, the reappearance of Brock Besser. What did you see? What did you like? And what concerns you?
Well, there some encouraging signs, I think, especially as the game went on. He was a little better. I didn't think he was engaged at all in the first period. It's a real interesting one to me because there's this presumption that he really is a legitimate first liner, 30-goal guy, you know, a guy who just, like, fills that spot. I'm just not sure if he is. I just haven't seen it a lot. I mean, he wasn't going great before he went down. Now he's back in the lineup. If he is that guy, it changes a lot of things. That top six, you know, with him, with the fully productive Brock Besser, changes a lot of things for the Canucks. I'm just not sure if he's that guy. What do you think?
No, I think it's a legitimate concern. I've had so many discussions with Brock Besser about his skating, how that explosiveness that we saw in year one, where he would not only gain the zone, he would go around the net, he'd look for options, maybe passing options, or he'd wheel into the dot and just let that ripper go. And it was heavy and it was accurate. And you talk to anybody who's had a back injury, that there's so many things at play here. And I don't know whether that Clutterbuck hit is still bugging him to this very day, because we just don't seem to see the same player. And when you've got something bugging you down there, whether it's scar tissue or whatever, and you plant, and suddenly that shot isn't as zippy as it used to be, or it's going over the net, that's a concern. The bigger concern to me is he getting there. I mean, doing something off the rush. I mean, Horvat and Tanev are not going to be in your 4x100 relay team, but they skate pretty well. He can't keep pace with them. And what I saw was them kind of waiting for Brock to get across the blue line with them so they don't go offside. That it's a concern. The one good thing I did see, I thought he had a trio of second period chances that were really good against the Islanders. But we have to look at this thing in the big picture. Maybe some of it has to do with coming back. You know, he didn't really have a practice. I mean, the Canucks are in a place now where, A, they don't practice, or they're traveling, or they have a day off. So maybe he could have benefited from two or three practices during the week. But the Canucks, the sense of urgency, they had to get him back in there. He's, I guess, a relatively quick healer. But when you look at what they really need down the stretch, they're going to need a more engaged guy. And they're going to need a guy who has to be better than 9% shooting accuracy when he has the puck. That really concerns me.
Yeah, they can't wait for him. And the thing is, they've got options on the right side now because, look, old friend Zach McEwen is all of a sudden finding the net. And, you know, he's turning that, like the looks of that third line, who knew that, you know, he was going to, you know, fit in as well as he had, because, there's two of the last three games, they've been different makers in Canucks wins. So, you know, there's that, and, you know, Vertanen has kind of been marginalized here. And I haven't seen a real drop-off in his play. It's just more the opportunities he's getting. And Toffoli, everybody can see what he's doing. So, you know, it's really up to Besser to fight his way in and, fight for his spot. and proved that he's that guy we saw, you know, in his full rookie year up until that back injury.
Right. Well, before Besser came back, the big mystery for me, and it still remains a mystery to me, is Jake Virtanen. I mean, Eriksson would start with Horvat and Pearson, and we'd start the clock. How long is it going to take before Jake gets a look in the top six? And he does. And he plays at pace. He's ringing shots off the bar. He's letting some howitzers go. He's more responsible in his own zone. He's making better decisions with the puck because he's really been hounded, not so much by Travis Green. JT Miller has taken him under his wing and said, you know what, you remind me a lot of me. First-round pick, couple snot-nosed kids, thought they knew everything, had to spend some time in the A and really, suck it up and learn how to play a complete game. The mystery to me is Jake Virtanen has 18 goals. He's a restricted free agent with arbitration rights. Mm-hmm. You know as well as I do, he gets to 20, and an independent arbiter who wouldn't know a hockey puck from a basketball will look at 20 goals and other guys of the similar stature and age, and suddenly Jake's getting a nice, big, fat raise. That kind of mystifies me with a guy who can do something in your top nine mix is constantly playing a fourth-line role. And I don't know if there's still a trust issue between the coach and the player. You'd like to think after all this time that Jake has done everything he could have possibly been asked to do and be effective. Because whether he's been playing with Horvat or playing with Pettersson, I've seen the one thing that Jake can do right off the hop is keep pace. Secondly, when the spirit moves him, he can hurt you. And he's got an underrated shot. When he comes down the wrong wing, the left side, and cuts to the net, man, he's dangerous. So that's an interesting consideration about how this right side is not only going to shake out down the stretch here, but if they don't make the playoffs, what are they going to do? I think Zach MacEwen has really established himself as an NHL player. The goal he got against the Islanders started with absolutely destroying a guy in the forecheck and getting to the front of the net and tipping home a goal. Gaudet did the same thing. I mean, MacEwen had, four hits as well. He's got 5 goals in 17 games. I mean, it's not Art Ross territory, but for what they want from that line. And Travis Green talked about it after the game. Said, I wanted to play that line more about the matchup situations. I didn't get them out there as much. But, man, when you're trying to get to the postseason and you can take some heat off your top six mix by throwing that line out there. And I think part of it is I wrote about this, the other day about Roussel. It's taken Roussel this long to get over that knee surgery. Suddenly he's got the giddy up. He's not reaching. He's not taking stupid penalties in the ozone. He's playing with some pace and some urgency. So the right side is going to be a real examination point for us, especially if they don't make the playoffs. What do you do with Jake? How is that going to configure? You're going to have some problems on your back end I think you need to address. But really, how's your right side going to shake out?
That leads, let's segue into our next topic of conversation then, everybody's favorite topic, the coronavirus. Something I never thought of until somebody pointed out to me, if they start playing in front of empty fans, and look, there's about a million ways you can come at that, but I just want to introduce this because it's something I never thought of, and it might be worth talking about. They start playing in front of empty fans, what's that do to the salary cap? What does that do to revenues? They were talking about an $88 million cap. A couple of weeks ago, that would have alleviated a lot of pressure on the Canucks, and I would venture to say 15 other teams around the NHL who are tight to the cap. What happens to that now? It's just, I mean, look, there are about a million variables involved in this new world we're living in with the coronavirus, but that was an interesting one to me.
Yeah, I think that's a really salient point because, San Jose has been really stricken. Santa Clara County is looking at gatherings over 1,000 people saying, no, we're not going to do that. The Sharks are on a road trip. They don't play at home till next week. So they're kind of doing the day-by-day analysis of what are we going to do here? Are we going to have to actually play in an empty rink? Do we have some leeway with having the other team host us? You can't have a neutral site game. The logistics just don't make that viable. And they're running out of time. You can't really postpone games and say, well, we're going to play them in mid-April. It's playoff time. And yesterday we learned that there's a state of emergency in Colorado, which could affect the Canucks when they get there Friday. It could happen that fast that they're playing in Denver in the Pepsi Center. And I guess there'll be a lot of room on press row because there's not going to be anybody else there. That could be a very viable thing. I think the interesting thing from the player's perspective, and this kind of really resonated with me. On Sunday, we still had access to the room. Sunday morning, game day skate. Bo Horvat, a lot of the players talked about how they really understand what's at play from a health perspective. But I was more impressed with how much they understand what we do and the fact that, you know, the team is doing everything it can, creating kind of this press conference environment where at least we have some access to the team at a safe distance. It kind of got to the point on Tuesday where we not only had the same arrangement after the morning skate, but there was another dressing room where there was a kind of a barrier, and there actually were some one-on-one interviews being conducted at a safe distance. So we're not the story. We shouldn't be the story, but we've sort of kind of become the story. But I'm really impressed with the players being vigilant and understanding what they have to do on a personal basis to be cautious, but understanding what we do as guys who've been around the rink way too long and the fact that we have a job to do, and they realize that.
Yeah, and like I said, there's just a million entry points into this. You know, you're talking about the trip to Colorado, and like, would anybody be surprised if they wake up tomorrow and go, no, we're locking down the arena? It'll be television cameras and broadcast crews and reporters, and that'll be it. I just look at the track this thing is on and look at what's happening around the rest of the world. I'm not sure I see it going any other way but towards that for how long, I know not.
Well, the only thing I've been able to glean, Ed, is that from everything I've been reading is that it's only going to get worse before it gets better. And a vaccine, by the time they actually find one and get it federally approved, we're probably talking the late fall before it's readily available to anybody. So I don't know. I mean, next week I'm scheduled to go Anaheim, LA, Vegas. And the way California is being hit, mm-hmm. I don't know. My colleagues at other entities are not traveling. They've had their travel cut.
Yep.
They don't want to risk coronavirus infecting anybody, any workplace or any actual employee. So I know here at Post Media, especially the province, we're being, you know, I'm very vigilant with what I do, but it's kind of out of my control. I mean, I get onto a plane and I've got a big pack of wet ones, and I'm ready to wipe everybody down. You know, I had that on my last trip. I was sitting there, and it was a nice couple sitting beside me, and they just regaling me with their trip through Southwest or Southeast Asia. And I'm going, pardon?
Oh, excellent.
And then I turn around, and they've got masks on, and I got my wet ones out, and I did a round two, and I wanted to say, don't take this personally, but I kind of like to wipe you down here. So I'm aware of it. I think we all are, and we'll just have to see where it goes from here. I mean, the players can't imagine playing before an empty rink. I mean, there was such a raucous atmosphere in the Islander game. I mean, Tyler Toffoli tried to give some levity to the situation. He's saying, well, you know, sometimes you do have empty rinks. I mean, I played in the American Hockey League, and, you know, so I'm sort of kind of used to it, but there's nothing that, you know, can replace what happens on a nightly basis at the NHL level. So it's day-to-day. It's kind of like check the injury list. We're all day to day, and we'll do the best we can.
Well, yeah, in this case, it's almost hour to hour, yeah, too. Like, I was working on a column yesterday, and, you know, you get those notifications on email, and there's a statement from the Columbus Blue Jackets that, you know, thank you, Governor, for your recommendation that all events that draw over 1,000 people shouldn't go forward, but we're going to anyways. And it just, this is just such uncharted territory.
Well, it is
for you know, everybody.
You know, those of us who have been around, I mean, we remember the big stock market and crash in 08. We remember SARS. But there always used to be something used to be some sort of containment.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be contained.
Or distance or whatever.
It's the market. Yeah, the market just hanging in there. It's going to turn around. Well, you've got this thing out there that's affecting the way people go about their business, their travel, their sickness, their health, their ability to travel, get somewhere, do their job. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. So a very serious situation. And I guess another one is, from a Canuck perspective, do they have the cojones to finish this thing out and stay above the playoff bar?
Yes. Good segue there. I mean, it's funny. It almost seems trivial. That's why we're here. And while they're still playing the games and keeping score, that's kind of the issue. I don't know. They didn't inspire a lot of confidence in me that last home game. And it's got nothing to do with effort or firepower, personnel. It's just they just give up way too many scoring chances. They just don't know how to lock it down in their own end. They spend too much time defending. I mean, that Islanders team is middling at best, and they gave up 49 shots. And if they would have pressed the issue in overtime, that number probably would have been 53, 54, 55. It's kind of the same formula they were using when Jacob Markstrom was around, and he masked those warts. Thatcher Demko, bless him, he's doing his best, and he was outstanding last night, but they're just putting so much pressure on their goalie. I just don't know if it's sustainable.
Well, there was nothing quite like being on that last road trip. And first it was the infamous Jacob Markstrom maintenance day, which dovetailed into Curiosity, radar up, and working with some sources to find out that it is indeed a knee injury and probably a meniscus problem, although he is skating now. And this kind of dovetails into everything that we thought it might be, that Markstrom tried to play through it, and sometimes the wear and tear, you get a small meniscus tear, it locks up. I mean, why would Jacob Markstrom travel with the Canucks on a four-game road trip if he wasn't thought he was good to go? It's not like it was something else. So then we're left with the Thatcher Demko situation, where I was actually shocked. I mean, he did everything he could in the Montreal game. 37 saves. They found a way to win that game in overtime. Maybe they were a little bit fortunate, but now it's you're the guy. You're the guy, everyday guy. And for such an engaging, cerebral, Boston College psychology major guy, he had the yips on that trip and was really, I don't know, second-guessing himself. I just think we don't understand sometimes what it is to be the guy. And, you know, I was talking to Corey Hirsch about it at one point on that trip, and he said, you know, the last thing you want to do in that position is overthink the position, is that you have to play on instinct. And to his credit, I thought Demko was better in the Islander game, but let's not kid ourselves. I mean, probably have a back-to-back situation where he's going to play both games here. He's going to be the guy. I don't know how far Markstrom is away. He's starting to skate, so maybe a week or 10 days. I mean, that would be that four-week window that you can come back and play after a slight meniscus tear. This is what Jonathan Quick did a year ago with the Kings. So that's there. But, boy, you know, it's funny. You know, winning solves everything. Losing exposes all the ugly things. You talked about the inability to defend. And when Markstrom has eight starts of 40-plus shots and he goes 7-0-1 and steals how many points? No, you know, you don't really realize that until now. And now they're in this pickle of having to play a guy every night. And really, if you think about Demko's body of work is minimal at this level. And that just adds another layer to him, because I find him really kind of almost living in the moment and just trying to get to the next game.
I like the way he battled, though, in that game against the Islanders, because, I mean, you know, it's a minute and a half and they're already down one buzz, and it's a deflection and it's kind of a disaster in front of them.
The 5-on-3.
And yeah, right. Yeah. But he did, you know, like he hung in there and he must have made six, just five alarm stops. Some of the goals, yeah, and you still look at the save percentage overall and go, like, it's below the league average. And I don't think last night brought it up. This is Wednesday. We're taping that, so we're talking about the Tuesday night game. But that's kind of – I kind of liken where he is in his development to a guy like Carter Hart. Mm. Remember, like, he came in with all the credentials in Philly, and they sort of – you know, it's an imperfect analogy, but they kind of threw him in there. And the Carter Hart this year, especially the second half of this season – pretty close to an elite NHL goalie. Demko, kind of, you know, similar credentials, you know, good career at Boston College, couple of years in the minors, came up, you know, that kind of blue chip goaltending prospect. But it's different. It's different when you don't have the safety net. It's different when you're the guy, when you don't have that body of work behind you. Just a completely different ball game. I think in the long run, this is going to help him. I think it might even, you know, accelerate his development a bit. Because he's got the tools. It's just such a complicated position.
I think the biggest value here is the goalie whisperer in Ian Clark.
Yeah, fair enough.
You know, Thatcher Demko talked about a loss on that road trip, and he said, I actually feel pretty good because he sees some technical improvements in his game. I mean, we tend to look at big goalies and we go, okay, is he square? Is he sealing up the short side? Is he going on his knees and throwing up the chicken wing, thinking, you know, you can stop a puck up high? Is he sealing the short side? The kind of the basic technical stuff we look at when we cover a game. But Ian Clark, of course, takes us to a whole sure. different science where it's not just the technical stuff. It's getting inside the guy's head. So I don't know what they have within the organization for Purple Hearts or whatever, but if he gets Demko dialed in and he gets a difference in terms of getting them to the postseason, you might want to put some zeros on that check.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great point. So what do you think? Do you think they have the stuff to get this over the line?
I'm going to stick by what I said at the start of the year. I thought they would fall just short, yep. 3 or 4 points short, because I didn't think they defended very well even last year. I mean, job one and 1A was let's improve the top six, and we got to do something with our defense. And guess what? They're in another situation here where they're going to have to take a hard look at what they're going to do in the offseason. You've got Stetcher as an RFA. I think they have to look at other things there. Chris Tanev got hurt in the Islander game. We're not sure if he's going to be on this trip. You know, I always look at Chris Tanev, who's tied for third in block shots in the league, that one day I'm going to be walking into Rogers Arena. He's going to be mopping the hallway. He's going to be with the organization forever. You know what I mean? But sooner or later, I mean, I think you got to make room for Rafferty, who was leading the American Hockey League and scoring by the – and I don't know – you know, the latest affliction with Ylevi is a hip, and that's never good when you're turning and you're not great in transition. People I've talked to in Utica said, yeah, he's playing in all these different situations, but when he pivots to get back in his own zone, he's struggling. So even with regardless of that, I still think there's work to do on the back end. So what we lose sight of in Vancouver is when you talk to people out east, and they look at the Canucks and they go, you know what? They're probably a year or two ahead of the curve right now with the season they're having. That we didn't really expect this, and I thought the playoff bar might be 96 points and maybe they'd be around 92 or 93 or 94. But having said that, I think my big thing was, okay, well, I'm challenging the team. Let's see how it responds. And for the most part, it's been great. But boy, if you can't defend, you can play balls to the walls and all other ends of the rink, but if you can't do it in your own zone, that could keep them from the postseason.
Yeah, I did, and I look at the teams chasing them in the West and around that area, and can you like really look me in the eye and say they are demonstrably better than the Winnipeg Jets?
No, I think the Jets are in.
Yeah, I do too, but I think that game Sunday is it's going to be the latest iteration of the game of the year for the Canucks. but I think that one will tell a story as well. They've got two games against Arizona. Yeah. And it was funny. I remember doing a podcast probably in November, and they hadn't played the Coyotes to that point, thinking, you know, would they get 2 points out of four?
They got two overtime losses last year. Yeah.
And that was really the difference between the two teams in the standings.
They had no answer for Brad Richardson, the whiskey drinker.
Look at it. So they've got two games. Yeah. And you know, again, by rights, these are games they really have to win. If they win both these ones against Arizona and squeak something out against Winnipeg, and I'm starting to take them a little more seriously, but I've got to see it. I was hoping to see something a little more in that homestand, and I really like the way they played the last two periods against Colorado when they allowed 15 shots and really took over the game. But then to lose against that Columbus team, that was a kick in the cojones.
I've been around the team for 21 years, and that game in Columbus at the end of a trip, back to back, 10 minutes left. Got the feet up, ready to hit send, or ready to edit.
That was the same way.
It was beyond shocking when you have veteran players like Sutter and Roussel taking bad penalties, and a total unraveling of the team. They better not look past the Yotes. I mean, when I'm looking at that game on Thursday night in Glendale, you know, if they get Chychrun back soon, that defense isn't bad. You've got Taylor Hall. And you've got Clayton Keller, and you've got Nick Schmaltz, there's some interesting characters in that top six mix. I think it would be pretty dangerous to say. I hate to think the Canucks are looking past anybody these days, but they better not look past Thursday night thinking they got a tougher matchup in Denver. That one is just sitting there, and they better make the most of it. I guess in summation here, if they don't make the playoffs, Ed, you know, there's always that, well, somebody has to pay. And are we of the mind that because whether it's the price point or the ownership's belief that the GM is sending a message that he likes, or a coach who's, again, affordable or knows some of these players from another movie, is the hockey ops department safe if they don't make the playoffs?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, you're looking at 5 straight years out of the playoffs under Jim Benning, and I mean, to me, that's the guy. who would pay the price. But I agree with you. I think, you know, he does what ownership tells him, and they like that. He goes out, he trades for JT Miller. He goes out, he gets Tyler Toffoli. They love that. The status quo wouldn't surprise me. Now, let's face it, nothing this organization would do would surprise you. The status quo wouldn't really surprise me. I just don't know, you know, like I said, five straight years out of the playoffs, how you come back and sell this one more time.
You know, I'd hate to, and when I do look at the coaching staff, I'd hate to think that a guy who I've known forever and really admire in learning the craft, and Nolan Baumgartner, who's basically responsible for the back end, might be in some sort of jeopardy here if you have to make a change. I just think that kind of the narrative will be, you know what, we took a great stride this year.
I think so.
The kids have gone to another level. We've got a Calder Trophy favorite here. We've got the best player acquired in a trade in JT Miller. We beat everybody to Tyler Toffoli, who has 27 goals, is going to score at least 30. There are a lot of positives to take away from this, and I think that's going to be the narrative at the end of the year. As far as the GM's concerned, I'm not sure. You know, there seems to be this feeling that you've got Jim Benning and you've got John Weisbrod, and then there's this divide, you know, when you get down to the scouting department and who's protecting who, who's, you know, it's almost like, you know, the Hatfields and McCoys, what's going on here? But I'm of the mind, if that comes to fruition, that I think the big cheese, I don't think Travis is going anywhere. I wonder about the GM, and I just think that at the end of the day, like you said, when you miss 5 years, somebody has to pay.
Yeah. I tend to agree with your overall take about the playoff hopes. I think that first week in April, we're going to be looking at those two games against Columbus, the game in Ottawa, and then the game against Arizona here, where they blow a 2-1 lead in the third period. And I think we'll look at those. That's where they lost their playoff spot.
Well, we'll keep the hope up, and we'll keep an eye on the coronavirus and see if we still have the ability to do what we do. Thanks for listening. This will be up at the province.com. Thanks for listening to the White Towel Podcast. Ben Kuzma here with Ed Willis.